You are listening to a Commonwealth Bank of Australia Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. This podcast provides general market-related information and is not intended to be an investment research report. The information contained in this podcast is based on previously published material, and before listening, you're advised to read the full Global Economic and Markets Research disclaimers, which can be found at combankresearch.com.au.
Welcome to the CommBank Global Economic and Markets Research Podcast. My name is Belinda Allen and I'm a Senior Economist here at CommBank. And today I'm joined by Gareth Aird, our Head of Australian Economics. Gareth, good to have you on again.
Yeah, hi Belinda. It's been a couple of weeks, so it's nice to be back on.
And no surprises, we're here to talk about some Australian economic data. And today we did see the release of the third quarter inflation data, and once again these numbers are just unprecedented. I feel we've kind of become accustomed to some very volatile economic data over this COVID period, and inflation is really no exception, and a lot of that's been driven by government policy and lockdown measures. How did that inflation data turn out today?
Yeah, I think that's right. Look, we saw a really big lift in the headline rate today. The CPI rose by 1.6%, and normally you'd say that's a shocking sort of result. But I think because we all expected it, it didn't really seem like that big a deal. What we know from what happened in Q2 is that there are a few anomalies at play that meant we saw this really big fall in the quarterly rate of headline inflation. It was down 1.9% in Q2, largely because childcare was free for most of the June quarter. That locked off 1.1 percentage points. We got most of that back over the September quarter because childcare is no longer free. And then petrol prices in Q2 plunged almost 20%, and that took off 0.7 percentage points. And then they partially rebounded over the third quarter of the year because of higher oil prices, and that then added back 0.3%. So we had basically two things, childcare and petrol prices, massively impacting headline inflation over both the June quarter and the September quarter. And that really largely explains why we've had such big swings in the data and why the underlying measures of inflation have been moving nowhere near as much as the headline rate.
No, they do look a lot less volatile. But really what those trimmed mean, which is the RBA's preferred measure, really shows is that there really is a very little inflation pulse out there in the Australian economy.
Yeah, look, that's right. When you sort of cut through the noise that we're getting in the headline figures and you look at sort of the underlying pulse of inflation in the economy, it's definitely slowed over the COVID period. I mean, it's kind of easy to forget that even before COVID, we were in a soft inflation environment, underpinned by pretty weak wages growth. And that was why the Reserve Bank over the second half of last year was cutting interest rates. So I think in a lot of ways, because of COVID, it's very easy to kind of forget the economic backdrop leading in. But we already were in a low inflation environment with inflation expectations, which were a key driver of inflation, already very anchored quite low. And so what's happened over the COVID period is we've just seen that trend basically further continue, and we've seen overall a step down in underlying inflation. So the trim mean, which is the one that the RBA seems to prefer, that's the one that they talk a lot about and is in their forecast each quarter in the Statement of Monetary Policy, that declined by 0.1% in the second quarter of the year, and it only rebounded by 0.4% over the September quarter. So one of the things we like to do as economists is then look at kind of underlying inflation on a six-month annualised pulse, and that's only coming in at 0.6%. So when you cut out sort of the noise that's going on the headline rate, what you can see is that the overall impact of COVID to date in terms of inflation in the economy is to put downward pressure on the overall rate of inflation. So we're certainly not in a deflationary environment, but we're in a disinflationary one.
Now, I'm going to ask you about the outlook for inflation in a minute, and also what that means for the RBA. But before we do, I guess we have seen some important trends come through the COVID period. These have impacted on prices quite dramatically. A lot of that's been the result of consumer behaviour, but also government decisions. You've spoken about the free childcare that's really impacted on, but also what we saw early in the pandemic back in March, we obviously saw a huge rush out to stockpile food. Now that's impacting on food prices. We've also seen some impact on other goods and services. You know, there are just some goods and services that cannot be bought at the moment. So domestic and international travel, they actually cannot get a price for that at the moment. So that's what we call imputed off the headline measure. But what are some of those trends that you've witnessed impacting from COVID during on inflation?
Yeah, so it's a good question because clearly where the basket lands doesn't mean that everything within that basket is moving at that rate. And the overall CPI reflects basically a whole lot of price rises and price falls across all the different components of the basket itself. And I guess if we're looking at the basket and trying to think, well, what kind of impact of COVID can we see across the various components of the basket? A few of them that stand out to me are around food inflation. So that's actually been up pretty strongly through the COVID period. That includes alcohol and tobacco. I mean, tobacco is the one that always rises because of the excise, and smokers will be well aware of that. But there's definitely been some inflation in that food and alcohol space. Also around household appliances. Mm. And that's an interesting one because, you know, our spending data has showed that there's clearly been an increase in spending on a range of household appliances and furnishings and fittings and whatnot. And that's not just a quantity-based increase. It's clearly now a price-based increase in spend going on too. And you know, the old dynamics of supply and demand.
Supply and demand, the economists.
Yeah, they look, that's right. They look to be well at work there.
Yeah, they do.
They're really the only kind of main standouts in terms of price rises. I mean, in terms of price falls, clothing is down over the COVID period. Interestingly, on the housing side, we've had rents that have been falling. And again, pre-COVID, I mean, growth in rents was very, very weak, but overall rents were still positive. But rents are actually coming down. So clearly that's good news for tenants out there, not so good for the landlords, obviously. Energy prices have been falling, which is an interesting one given that you know, for many years around, you know, the policy debate was around can we get energy prices lower? Mm. And they've actually been falling a little bit. And then even health and education prices, I mean, they're actually up, but not up by as much as usually is the case. So I guess when you dissect it all, you end up with things that have been going up and down. But overall, the movement in the basket is one suggesting we're in a pretty low inflation environment.
And we do expect that to continue, although I think probably more so than in recent times, there's a few more question marks about how inflation is going to go over the next few years. There are a lot of moving parts at play. We obviously think there's going to be a lot of spare capacity in the labour market for quite some time, so that's going to hold down wages growth, and we know that's been a very important driver of inflation. But at the same time, though, we have the Reserve Bank of Australia undertaking a very unprecedented easing program, including expanding their purchases of government bonds, expanding their balance sheet, and huge fiscal stimulus. How are these offsetting factors really going to drive the inflation outlook in the future?
Yeah, that's it. Look, I mean, it's a really interesting one. And the problem is that we as economists love models, and a lot of them aren't working at the moment because there's so many other things going on at the moment that sort of previous relationships, which are actually pretty tight, are no longer as tight as they were. And I think the wages inflation one is a really interesting one. You know, in the economics team at Commonwealth Bank, we're pretty comfortable or confident with the view that wages growth is going to be weak for many years now, simply because labour market slack will be elevated and it'll be hard for people to negotiate a pay rise. Now, normally that would be one of your key inputs into thinking about inflation. And you know, as we saw pre-COVID, low wages growth tends to generate or be a contributor to low inflation. But what we've got at the moment in the economy is even though wages growth is actually quite weak, household income growth has actually stepped up because of the huge amount of fiscal stimulus and all those payments going into the household sector. Now, the way policy is at the moment, it looks like there's going to be a slowdown in income growth because those payments going to the household sector will wane. And that should then overall mean you don't get an inflationary lift from all those payments going to the household sector. But look, the outlook for fiscal policy is really uncertain at the moment, as it is the economy more generally. And if it turns out to be the case that the government wants to throw even more money into the household sector, and we see that positive household income story continue, that it is possible that you see, you know, wages growth and inflation start to decouple and we see a lift in inflation. I mean, it's not our central scenario. I should kind of stress that. But I think we've got to be acutely aware of the risk in all of this. And we're going down a path where we haven't been before. And we've got to be open to the idea that you know, we do start seeing some outcomes that maybe previously we didn't expect to get.
No, it does seem we're going to go more into unknown territory where, as you say, previous models that we have used may not be anywhere near as relevant as what they were in the past. You know, recovery from a pandemic, lots of monetary and fiscal stimulus, it is really an unknown. And that's, I think, where looking at that high frequency data will be increasingly important. Now, I do want to move on to the Reserve Bank of Australia. They are meeting next week now. It's coming up very quickly. So next week we've got the Reserve Bank meeting on the 3rd of November. Obviously, US election results is going to be a massive week. Now, we are expecting the Reserve Bank of Australia to announce further easing. What are we expecting?
Yeah, look, we're expecting the Reserve Bank to ease policy in next week on Melbourne Cup Day. And we're clearly not alone there. I mean, the consensus view is now that the Reserve Bank is going to ease policy. So the question is, what are they actually going to do? And we think they're going to do a few things. The first will be, you know, what they sort of traditionally would do, which is lower interest rates if they wanted to ease monetary policy, and that's reducing the cash rate, albeit that it's so low at the moment. I mean, they can't go all that much lower, but the cash rate target's currently 25 basis points, and we think they drop that down to 10 basis points. And then in turn, they've got a few other interest rate targets at the moment that it looks like they're going to lower as well. One is the target on the 3-year government bond yield, which is also 25 basis points. We think they lower that to 10. And then finally, there's a term funding facility at the moment in play, which is basically the Reserve Bank providing finance to the banks, which can then be lent into the real economy. That interest rate currently is also 25 basis points, and we think they lower that to 10 basis points. So basically reducing the current interest rate structure they've got, lowering those three key rates from 25 basis points to 10 basis points. That, I think, seems to be the consensus view out there. Where it gets a little bit more interesting is around what we think they'll announce in terms of a bond buying program or an asset purchasing program. So as part of their yield curve control, they've been buying government bonds, but they haven't to date had an official quantity of bonds that they've signaled to the market that they intend to buy. And they've also been largely conducting their bond purchases at the short end of the curve. We think based on a few speeches and some subtle messaging they've been giving through the RBA minutes that they're going to announce an official bond buying program with an explicit intention to purchase bonds further out on the curve in that 5 to 10 year part of the curve. And we think they'll announce a fixed quantity, and we put that at $100 billion. Now, we don't think they're going to announce the time frame in which they intend to make those purchases by, just so they can retain a little bit of flexibility. But clearly the conviction there is a little bit lower than it is on the interest rate side. At the end of the day, I think they are going to announce a bond buying program. It's just, you know, nobody can be sure at this stage exactly what that's going to look like.
No, certainly a very unprecedented territory for the Reserve Bank. And this will really be the most significant easing measure since the initial easing back in March at the start of the pandemic. Mm. And I guess, I mean, the two questions that spring to mind for me, and in particular what we've been trying to answer for our clients, is why is the Reserve Bank doing it now? You know, we haven't seen them ease throughout the pandemic, you know, when the situation was bad. They have admitted that the economy is recovering. So why now? And really, what are they trying to achieve?
Yeah, look, they're very good. They're very good questions.
Just two easy questions for you.
That's right. Look, I think why now? They, in their own words, they've said that they think that they get more traction from easing now than they would have done a few months ago. So look, that's kind of their reasoning in their own words on why they think they've waited till now. I think the second thing is that they've basically been watching how the economy has been going, trying to look at what central banks have been doing offshore. Mm-hmm. And I think just basically thinking, is there any more that we can do here in Australia that will help the economy? And I think in a lot of ways, when thinking about the Reserve Bank, there's definitely some complexity to it, to trying to understand what they're doing. And then also there's a sort of simplistic objective behind it all, which is, the central bank just wants to help the economic recovery. And it's as simple as that. And they've got to the stage now where they think that if they can ease financial conditions further, that will help the economic recovery. And look, there's so many other things in play which have been holding back the economy, not least just having restrictions on what households can and can't do. But look, I think at the margin, if the central bank thinks that they can ease policy that will help the recovery in any way, then they're going to go down that path. And I think on the interest rate side, they're simply doing what they always previously did when they wanted to provide support to the economy, which is basically lower interest rates. And, you know, lowering the cash rate target from 25 basis points to 10, they'll probably think that that will result in lower mortgage rates and lower interest rates to businesses. And that's always the way, the channel that they use. I mean, the problem now for them is that they just can't do all that much of it because that cash rate lever is almost exhausted. I mean, we thought earlier in the year, and they thought too, that it was exhausted going down to 25 basis points. But look, it looks like they've had a slight change in thinking there to think that they can go just that little bit lower. So, you know, at the margin, that's going to help households and businesses that have got debt that needs to be repaid, and it'll probably at the margin as well encourage a little bit more credit growth. I think where it gets maybe a little bit more complicated is around the bond buying program, exactly what they're trying to achieve there. If you look at what they say, what it looks like they're thinking is that yields here in Australia, sort of around that 5 to 10 year part of the curve, might be higher here than offshore because the central bank isn't actively buying bonds in that area, whereas central banks overseas are actually buying bonds at that part of the curve. I think if the central bank thinks that they can lower those interest rates through a bond purchasing program, then that'll be beneficial for the Australian economy because it'll put some downward pressure on the Australian dollar. And in turn, that obviously helps our exporters. I mean, I think there's one other thing as well at play here, which they're not going to mention explicitly, but effectively announcing a huge bond buying program helps both the Commonwealth and the state governments to issue their debt at very, very low cost. And that means that even though we've got these huge borrowing programs, largely at the Commonwealth level, but to a lesser extent that will come through at the state levels, the interest cost on that debt will be very, very low. And that's obviously good for the taxpayer and it helps the budget bottom line.
And as our chief economist, Stephen Halmerich, continues to like to say, the economic return on that debt is much higher than the interest cost on that debt. Gareth, great to have your insights and that very simple reason why the RBA wants to do more. Thank you.
Cheers, Belinda.
Now, if you would like to read our note on the inflation data released on the 28th of October and also our preview of the Reserve Bank November decision released on the 26th of October, you can find that on combankresearch.com.au. And also where CBA data is cited, this refers to the bank proprietary data. As the statistics take into account only the bank's data, it may not reflect all trends in the market. All customer data used or represented is anonymised and aggregated before analysis and is used and disclosed in accordance with the group's privacy policy statement.